absolutely incredulous over that. Day in and day out, it never ceases to amaze me, really. Well, we'll talk about the Kagans tomorrow, I promise. I do want to remind you, this is a listener-supported program, and we are in need of your support. You listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, and don't forget, you've heard from the radical right.
This is the Quality News Network. Former White House counsel Harriet Myers will not show up to testify tomorrow before a House panel investigating U.S. attorney firings. President Bush ordered today Myers not to appear. The president's former political director, Sarah M. Taylor, refused to answer many questions from the panel about the firings of 9 federal prosecutors. Taylor also said she knew of no involvement by the president in the firings. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff said he has a gut feeling about a terrorist attack on U.S. soil this summer. Chertoff is concerned the American people are being lulled into a false sense of security. The secretary added there is no specific evidence of a future attack. Republican Senator Olympia Snowe is now the second Republican this week to support a bill ordering troops out of Iraq. At least 10 Republicans in recent weeks have expressed support for reducing the military's role in Iraq. Meanwhile, the Senate is debating war funding and a Democratic amendment to begin withdrawing troops by April 2008. The president said he would veto any such legislation and will not rethink the war strategy until September. The number of refugees worldwide increased by 2 million this year, bringing the total number to 14 million refugees. That's the highest number since 2001. The rise is attributed to a continued exodus from Iraq, where 790,000 people fled last year. An 8-day siege at a mosque in Islamabad, Pakistan, has finally ended. More than 50 militants and 10 soldiers died and 33 wounded in the final 35-hour assault by elite special forces. The death toll is over 100. Libya's Supreme Court today upheld the death penalty for 6 Bulgarian nurses and a Palestinian doctor convicted of infecting 400 children with HIV. The 7 medical workers imprisoned for 9 years could get a lesser sentence as a result of court-approved restitution payments that would be made to the victims' families. Documents and audio tapes from Richard Nixon's presidency will now be made public at the Nixon Library in Yorba Linda, California. For 20 years, library visitors were told the Watergate scandal was a coup. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business, next.
Hulhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking. I just wonder why you think it's important to bank in a local bank.
Because it's here in our community, in our area, and we tend to find that they have the best service for us. They are always there when we need them.
Do you like the idea that it's a local bank with big bank services and benefits?
You get all the benefits of the big banks, but you walk in, people know who you are.
Yeah.
Now, it's a community bank, but it's part of a network of banks.
Absolutely. They have the resources, but, of course, the personal touch of a local bank.
I am here once a week, yes.
Taking money out.
Taking money out, putting it in and taking it out.
So you're doing a lot of banking in here.
I carry it in wheelbarrow.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
China today banned a thickening agent in antifreeze from use in toothpaste. Chinese-made toothpaste containing the toxic substance has been banned in North and South America, Europe, and Asia. U.S. Senators Arlen Specter and Jeff Bingaman today are expected to introduce legislation forcing industry to cut greenhouse emissions 20% by the year 2030. Affected would be steelmakers, power companies, and oil refineries. The newly refurbished space shuttle Endeavour is now on the launch pad and awaiting its first flight since 2002. The 11-day mission set to begin August 7th will carry a crew of 6, which include a teacher turned astronaut to the International Space Station to deliver cargo and equipment. A giant squid measuring 26 feet long, 3 feet wide, and weighing 550 pounds was found today on a Tasmanian beach. The largest squid recorded in modern times was caught in the same waters earlier this year. For the first time in a dozen years, the nation's biggest home builder expects a quarterly loss. D.R. Horton says net sales orders have dropped 40%. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $72 a barrel. And at Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is up 69 points, the NASDAQ is up 11 points, and the S&P 500 is up 8 points. There's more on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Got a terrific show for you today. Lots and lots in store. More of the interviews I did a couple weeks ago at the Campaign for America's Future, including a presidential candidate. True, he may be one of the more obscure and least likely to win, but hey, he's running for president nonetheless, and you'll hear my quite detailed interview with Mike Gravel. Then I talk with Vice Chairman of the Democratic Party, Susie Turnbull. This is the number two person in the Democratic Party, second only to Howard Dean. She's going to tell us why we have this crazy primary system where Iowa and New Hampshire get to go first every year. Then I've got one of the heroes of the left, the hero of the blogosphere, the former Connecticut Democratic senatorial candidate Ned Lamont. Remember him? He beat Lieberman in the Democratic primary and then narrowly lost to him in the general election. We're going to talk about the Democratic Party. And then finally, a Kennedy, former Maryland gubernatorial candidate, Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, gives some interesting perspective on why those of us that claim we hate politics are wrong. And sometimes you have to deal with dirty politics to make a difference. So that's all coming up. Before I get to any of these interviews, though, I can't resist the news today. Two really important stories broke. Well, let's say one's important and one's fun. The important story has to do with Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez digging himself an ever deeper hole. You know, sometimes you think that when you've dug clear through to China, you can't dig any deeper, but Gonzalez is digging himself even deeper. I guess he'll be leaving the planet soon. Apparently, Gonzalez lied yet again to Congress when he said that there were no abuses under the Patriot Act. He was asked a very direct question whether any of the civil liberties had been abused, whether there were any reports of that happening. He said, no, absolutely not. None whatsoever, Congress. Of course not. We would never violate your civil liberties. That's absurd. That's ridiculous. Turns out there were hundreds of examples, and he knew about them. And it's been documented in writing. And yes, many people have now come forward to say, yes, we told Gonzalez this. There it goes, my friends. Another lie from our embattled Attorney General, who really has zero respect for the truth, zero respect for the law, and is still our nation's highest law enforcement officer. I've decided that the Democrats would be well advised, and in fact, I'm going to call my representative, to begin impeachment proceedings right away for Alberto Gonzalez. Now, you know, I'd rather impeach Cheney and the president and all of that, but we can't win that battle right now. However, I think we could win the battle against the Attorney General. It only requires 67 senators, and I would be amazed if we didn't get half the Republicans, along with all of the Democrats, voting to get rid of this guy. I mean, what he's done so far, this is the final straw. I mean, you got the U.S. prosecutors, you got the warrantless wiretapping, you got the trying to trick then Attorney General John Ashcroft and acting Attorney General James Comey into signing lawless things when Attorney General John Ashcroft was in the hospital, sort of his Don Corleone moment. And now this, now a blatant lie to Congress. And the nice thing about articles of impeachment is it will really help in these subpoenas. You know, of course, that the Democrats, both in the Senate and the House, have subpoenaed two very important people. They're small players, but they are the cogs in the wheel. They hold the data. Harriet Myers, the former nominee to the Supreme Court, the president's right-hand woman, a woman who, like Alberto Gonzalez, will do anything the president wants, and a 30-year-old woman named Sarah Taylor, who, as often happens in this administration, fresh out of college, all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and ready to do anything the president wants. They have the data. They've got the stuff that shows, but really all of us know, but we need to see the proof, which is that Karl Rove decided to hire and fire these prosecutors based on pure political considerations, did so, I believe, in order to influence elections and to keep African Americans from voting, which is, of course, illegal, as it is illegal to take account of their political affiliation. It's illegal under the Hatch Act. They know Karl Rove broke the law, but that's why they're not talking. That's why the president is declaring executive privilege. Now, I want you to think about how this would work with articles of impeachment. If the House Judiciary Committee, and I think John Conyers could be convinced to do this, were to begin articles of impeachment against Gonzalez, then these questions of the U.S. prosecutors and so forth, everything that the president is claiming executive privilege, saying I don't have to give you, saying it's not relevant, you don't need to know this, this is just internal communications, becomes relevant to impeaching Gonzalez. And impeachment is a core function of the House. It's one of the few functions of the House that's expressly in the Constitution of the United States. So whereas a court might say, you know, one of the Bush-packed courts, of which there's so many these days, oh, well, we're not going to let Congress find out what goes on in the executive branch. You have no right to oversight. Go fly a kite, Congress. It would be virtually impossible for a court to say that Congress can't have the information necessary to impeach. And in fact, the failure to provide the information, that could be Article 1 of impeachment. So I really think that's a great step-by-step way to go. You start with Gonzalez. Cheney's next. But you start with Alberto Gonzalez. He's an easy fish. He's easy pickings. Let's impeach Gonzalez. And this latest news about, you know, that he lied to Congress about abuses of the Patriot Act and civil liberties is just perfect. Because believe it or not, there are some Republicans out there, sometimes they call themselves libertarians, who actually care about civil liberties. There are Republicans who actually respect the Constitution. Not many, but a few. And it'll be very hard for them to defend running roughshod over it. So I think that's really exciting news. And let's all give John Conyers a call and ask him to impeach Attorney General Gonzalez. The other news I want to talk about before I get to my interviews, and there is a lot going on today, but that shouldn't stop you from calling in if you want to add your two cents, is it's always fun, it's just so much fun to catch the Republicans in hypocrisy. And nowhere is that best proved than a certain Senator David Vitter, a Republican of Louisiana. Now, let's be clear what Senator Vitter stands for. He believes in abstinence education, that children should be taught never to have sex until marriage. Absolutely not. And he definitely thinks gay people shouldn't get married. After all, this is a sacred institution only to be between a man and a woman and the man's prostitute. Well, at least that must be how he sees it, because, of course, he has been seeing the D.C. Madam. His name was in the little black book of the D.C. Madam, and he was kind of hard to find yesterday. I should note that in his campaign in 2004, when he said, quote, we need a U.S. senator who will stand up for Louisiana values, unquote, he condemned as, quote, just crass Louisiana politics, unquote, the charge that he had an affair for a year with a prostitute in Louisiana. I guess he likes his different prostitutes. This time is different. This time he was caught in the act. This time all he could do was ask for forgiveness for his family. His wife may not feel the same way. His wife told Newhouse News Service in 2000, this is a wonderful story in the Washington Post, she said that if David Vitter cheated on her, she wouldn't react like Hillary Clinton, who was a little too forgiving. She would act more like Lorena Bobbitt. Remember Lorena Bobbitt? The woman who cut off her husband's member while he was sleeping? Well, Wendy Vitter says, quote, if he does something like that, I'm walking away with one thing, and it's not alimony, trust me. I think fear is a very good motivating factor in a marriage. Well, Senator Vitter is in hiding, either from the press or perhaps from his wife, using a particularly sharp shears, I guess. Of course, this is particularly common for Louisiana politics. As Governor Edwin Edwards said many years ago after he was caught having an affair with a stripper, he said he'll only lose the election if he's caught in bed with a dead girl or a live boy. Heard that expression? And, of course, Vitter got there in the Congress replacing Bob Livingston. Remember him, the House Speaker, for about a day, the one who was demanding that Clinton be impeached until he was caught having an affair. Well, the Republicans say, you know what, sex is not our business. Senator Orrin Hatch says, quote, I've never judged a human being on these types of issues. The same Republicans that insisted that all business stop, that Bill Clinton be examined under oath about every single affair he had, extramarital or otherwise. Let's get all the details. Let's stop it. If Clinton wants to bomb Osama bin Laden, let's say no. That's wagging the dog. Monica Lewinsky is more important. Rushing to the defense of David Vitter. Well, let's get a couple things straight here. For one thing, Bill Clinton never paid for sex. And whatever you think of his dalliance with Monica Lewinsky, you know what? It was legal. Vitter's was not. So if we're going to prosecute Johns, I say go after Senator Vitter first. If you want to call in and discuss either of those topics I just raised, feel free to do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. When we come back, if there are no calls, I'll get right to my interview with presidential candidate Mike Gravel.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
I can't see. Your foot.
And again, I was talking about the Republican debate. So we'll get to the point where we're going to drag a terrorist out to the stage with the Republicans, and they're all going to take turns kicking him in the nuts and see who the audience cheers for the most. That's going to determine who's going to be the Republican candidate. Because that's what they are. Kick him in the nuts. How do they do that on South Park? Rochambeau. They're going to Rochambeau the terrorists.
Come on, rub my nipples while I torture this little piggy.
No, that sounds pretty sweet to me.
The Cup of Joe radio show with your host, Joe Vecchio, the working man's thinking man. Moving to 11 a.m. to noon, June 18th, right here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. Coming up later this hour, my interview with presidential candidate Mike Gravel, my discussion with the second in command of the Democratic Party, Susie Turnbull, about our primary system, and good old progressive Ned Lamont. Stay tuned for that. But hey, before we go there, we've just got to sit back and enjoy good old fashioned Republican hypocrisy in the face of Senator David Vitter, and I have a caller who wants to do just that. Susan, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark. You know as well as I do that the Republicans are immediately going to start bleeding Bill Clinton. And since they are, I have two differences between Vitter and Clinton. First of all, I really, really doubt Clinton ever had to pay for it ever.
That's right. That's certainly
second
true.
Second difference is...
And it's not illegal when you don't have to pay for it.
Second difference is, and I think this is telling, I really cannot picture Bill Clinton self-righteously proclaiming his morality while he is busily banging somebody else who is not his wife.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's obviously Newt Gingrich, for example, is a classic example. Here he was running the House, running the impeachment, and at the same time he was cheating on his wife. And, of course, Newt Gingrich did so in a particularly gruesome fashion. His wife was dying, and she's literally in the hospital, catching her last breath, and he's banging the nurse
papers
that's treating her. and then delivers divorce papers. That's Republican family values. But you know, it's interesting that Vitter wants to teach children abstinence. Apparently he feels that if we don't teach them abstinence, they're going to be going to prostitute after prostitute after prostitute, just like he does.
Yeah. But I do not remember Bill Clinton sinking to that type of hypocrisy. Now he did have his days, but none of it, you know, most of it revolved around free trade and stuff like that and politics.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can argue about Clinton's policies. I mean, that's perfectly fair game, and you know, that's fair criticism.
Sure,
but the thing is to have these Republicans who are saying, in effect, don't have sex. Sex is wrong. You know, don't have sex outside of marriage. And I don't have a problem with people saying that. That's certainly a reasonable thing to say. But then they have legislation where that says, we're not going to even teach you about how to use contraceptives. We're not going to even let you know how to protect yourself from diseases that can kill you. Instead, we're just going to tell you to avoid sex, which, you know, is about like leaving a child with a cookie jar and saying, you know, don't eat any cookies. It's not going to work. And yet here you have a guy who apparently this isn't his first hooker. I mean, he has apparently hooker after hooker. You know, so much so his wife's ready to cause him some bodily injury.
And, you know, I can understand. Hey, I was married once before I was married this time, and I can... Let me put it this way. I can sympathize.
Adultery is you know, it's in the Ten Commandments. It's also prostitution, they say, is the oldest profession in the book. I wouldn't, if a guy were to say, look, my private life is my private life. I don't try to legislate other people's morality. I don't try to use the federal government to stop people from having sex. I believe that, you know, people should just be left alone in their private lives. If that person then had an affair, I would say, well, you know what? They're consistent,
that's
okay?
Consistent.
They believe that these kinds of things shouldn't be regulated, and so I'm not going to judge them. It's the people who want to control other people's lives while they're doing the same and worse to someone else. I mean, you know, Vitter doesn't want gay people to get married. Why not? Because his marriage is so sacred? You know?
There was a line in a book that is classic, and it just describes Republicans down to a T. They never say, legislate against this to keep me from doing it. It's always legislate against this to keep somebody else from doing it.
Of course. They want to control
Republican.
Others. That's exactly right. Hey, Susan, thanks for your call. I appreciate it.
You have a nice day, Mark.
You too. I want to get right to my interview now with presidential candidate Mike Gravel. If you find him a little strange, that's not an error in your listening. It's not, you know, don't bang your computer. He is a little strange. Listen closely, though, to what he has to say, and I'll be commenting about it after the interview.
And now sitting next to me is a candidate for president of the United States, Senator Mike Gravel, who was on The Inside Scoop. We just checked it out 2 years ago, June 6, 2005, to talk about secrecy, how far he has come. Now he's up there on stage with all the big ones, and he's actually running for president of the United States. Welcome back to The Inside
Thank
Scoop.
Thank you very much for having me, Bart.
So now, why are you running for president?
Well, two reasons. One, I want to make the American people aware of the fact that there's a way that they can be empowered to become lawmakers. And that's very important, because there's only two possible venues for change in our society. One is the government, where the problems lie, and the other is with the American people. But the American people do not control the central power of government, which is lawmaking. So if we can make the people lawmakers, they'll have a better handle on the government, and they'll be partners with their elected officials.
Okay, make the people lawmakers. What are you talking about? You're talking about lobbying? You're talking about running for office, writing bills? What are you talking about?
Writing bills and passing them. Just making laws. Now, the lobbyists, they're part of representative government. They're, in fact, they're the beneficial part and the bad part of representative government. It works both ways. But the people who just make laws, then they would have to live by them. But that needs a deliberative process. Half the Americans today make laws at the state and local level of government. Now, if they can make laws at the state and local government, why can't they do it federally? And they should. But even at those...
Half of Americans make laws at state and local...
Already, government. Yes. Oh, that's 24 states. 24 states have lawmaking capability called...
You're talking
initiative.
About initiative referenda. Would you want that at a national level, a national vote?
Of course
vote
I want that. Oh, my
direct
God.
Direct democracy?
Of course I want that.
But wouldn't that lead to lots of propaganda campaigns and Karl Rove swift voting and dumbing down the issue?
Just the opposite. Just the opposite. The people are smarter than their leaders. They can identify what's in their interest. No, right now, representative government just floods us with their crap, with their bias, with the cooked information.
So direct democracy at the federal level. So how often will we have to vote then?
Well, you could vote once a week.
Once a week?
Why not? If they got that many issues.
I lived in Switzerland for a year. And they
going to bring Switzerland. How often do they vote over there?
All the time.
Four times a year.
It seemed like all the time. I know in one village, they were the last country actually to allow women to vote, because in this particular canton of Switzerland, you voted with your sword. And all the men that wanted yes voted swords, and all wanted no voted swords. They said, well, women can't carry a sword, so women can't vote until 1973. But... that aside, they truly believe in direct democracy, but it's a much smaller country.
No.
Can we do it in the United States of America?
No. Stop and think. Swiss picked up the electric direct democracy back in 1848. Now, we were a small country in 1848. The Swiss had four languages, as you know, four cultures, four religions, have no resources, and today, the only, and when they put it on, they had just ended a three-year religious civil war. And so since 1848, the Swiss have lived in peace, and they're per capita one of the wealthiest people in the world.
So now, tell me specifically what you're advocating in the United States.
Well, but stop and think. The only difference between the Swiss and all the rest of the democracies is they brought the people into government as partners with their elected officials. And that's exactly what I'm advocating in the United States.
They also got mountains to keep them from invasion. But let's put that aside for now.
Quite the contrary. The mountains, every major war except the Second World War, and they were touched by the First World War. Up until 1848, every major war was a scourge in Switzerland. It was the crossroads for everybody. When they talk about Hannibal crossing the Alps, what do you think that was?
That was in the mountains. So how do we implement this in the United States?
The same way. I've written a piece of legislation that is very deliberative, a very detailed process, where the people can make laws, and you and I could decide, and then you follow the process, then people vote on it. If they vote for a law, the Congress can change it if they want, and then the people can change what the Congress does. So it's a partnership.
So you'd get so many petition signatures, that kind of thing? And
that's one of the ways of qualifying it. The other way is with a poll. You could say, let's take a poll. If 50% of the people want to vote on this, not vote for or against it, but want it to be on the ballot, then that would qualify it. Then once it's qualified...
you got to find a reputable pollster and all those kinds of things. People could play with polls.
All of these things can be... this is not rocket science. The science is very refined. And keep in mind, you'd create the electoral trust, which would manage the procedures of the people's government or people's legislature on behalf of the people.
Now, would this federalize the country too much? As you know, the Constitution only allows the federal government to do certain limited things. Congress has certain limited powers. People can't vote nationally on all issues unless you change the Constitution.
Well, that's right.
So you want to change the Constitution.
The National Initiative, which I'm saying you can vote for right now, is a constitutional amendment and a federal statute. The federal statute has the detailed procedures on how to make laws. hearings, markups, communications, advisory votes, all of that, okay? And then the constitutional part of it, it just asserts our sovereign legislative right to make laws.
Now, some would argue that that harms local control. That it may be true that 60% of the people agree with X, but it may be that there's a large pocket of people in one state or two states or three states where 60% don't want X, and you're sort of forcing one national model all across the country.
Well, we're forcing one national body of human beings. You want acres to vote? You want cows to count?
No. But there's an argument that certain things should be under local control. I mean,
give me an example.
Well, say the bridge to Alaska in your home state.
Which is an embarrassment.
Which is an embarrassment, but it's an embarrassment because you had all of us compiling our tax money in the 50 states to pay for that bridge. If the people of Ketchikan, Alaska want that bridge and they're willing to pay for it, that's perfectly fine. It shouldn't be voted on at the national level.
That's right. And so you had the legislators from Alaska ripping it off in the Congress. They happen to be conservative Republicans, but they act like socialists.
Yes, they do.
So they're good.
But my point is that sometimes the local and the national interests differ, don't they?
But there's no reason why the local... Stop and think. I said this law will permit the people to make laws in every government jurisdiction of the United States. So let's take Anchorage. And so if you and I are residents of Anchorage and we want to do something, the city council doesn't want to take it up, we do an initiative.
Wow.
And then if the people of Anchorage vote the majority for our initiative, it's the law of Anchorage. City council began.
So your constitutional amendment would affect not just federal law, but every single voting jurisdiction in the country.
Of the United States, we empower the people totally. Totally. And the people are immediately, at the federal level, the senior partners. Stop and think. Supposing the Congress decides that they're not going to abide by the will of the American people. What do you think the people could do?
Well, other than voting them out. You mean they could do direct democracy?
Wipe them out. Either you believe that the people are the sovereigns of their society or they're not. Right now, our society is ruled by a minority. And that's what you got. I'm trying to change that by letting the American people rule by a majoritarian fashion.
Is that your primary issue in your presidential race?
Oh, there's no question about it. It's my primary issue. It floats my boat in my whole life.
Very, very interesting stuff. Now, Alaska has direct democracy.
First off,
yeah,
they do have voting. I'm a resident of Virginia.
Oh, excuse me.
The reason why everybody says Alaska is
because that's where you were a senator.
That's right. And that's where all of my accomplishments were visible from. So, but Alaska does. It's one of the 24 states that has initiative laws. And the studies show that states that have initiative laws, where the people make laws, are better governed than the states that don't have it. That's what the studies show. And those studies go all the way back to revolutionary times, when the studies showed that communities with town meetings were better governed than the communities that did not.
Yeah, see, town meetings I get, because town meetings, people are standing up, they're talking with each other, they're challenging each other. I lived in California for a number of years. I'm well familiar
with direct democracy.
I know how propositions work. And I also know that, you have people that for example, buy signature gatherers.
And
tell me this. I wonder if you agree with me on this. If we implement your plan, are you willing to join me in banning purchasing signature gatherers? If you believe in something strong enough, you should get the signatures yourself.
I would. Well, wait a second.
Why should you be able to hire someone and have more money?
What's wrong with hiring somebody to collect signatures?
Because if enough people believe in it, they should be able to go out there and get it themselves.
You're looking for the Trinity, that the skies are going to open, everybody's going to have wisdom. No, what happens is we're talking about issues that you put before the people, they become informed, they reason the issue out, and they make a decision. You're assuming that everybody will know the answers before you put the issue
out. No, what I'm saying is that there should be enough people who care about the issue.
That's right.
And it could be, a tenth of 1%.
They don't have any money.
Then they can stand out there and gather signatures. But then they shouldn't be paid for it, because my concern is this, and this is what I saw in California.
Mark, we have a difference of opinion on that.
Fair enough.
And I will just.
But one of the things I saw in California.
You can stipulate I think I'm wrong.
Let me just make my argument, then we can do that.
I lived in California too.
Right, but part of the problem is if you have an extremely rich something fighting extremely poor something, the rich people hire all the signature gatherers to get their petition for direct democracy, and the poor people don't have that money,
so
I want to equalize the playing field.
When you get a 60 issue, the poor people come out, everybody comes out. when you have a very esoteric issue that takes reflection, then you got to buy the signatures because people aren't interested. But yet it's a problem. Here, look at this. I'm trying to change the tax system of the United States of America. I think the present tax system is corrupt. Corrupt.
I agree.
Do you hear anybody, any other politician running for president talking about changing that?
Only tweaking it.
Do you hear the American
not major
people
changes.
Jumping up and down? Want to change that?
Well, people want to change it, but see, everyone says we want to change the tax system, but the devil's in the details. I want to change it in this way, and you want to change it in that way.
No,
if you're not from a farm state, you want to end farm subsidies.
It's not that bad. Here, do away with the IRS, do away with the income tax, put on a sales tax, and I'll know what you pay.
Yeah, but a sales tax hurts the poor.
Oh, does it?
Yes.
What makes you think that?
Because I think that I'll support a wealth tax.
You're a nice guy. Let me not mow you, but let me explain.
Go ahead. Go after
me.
It's okay.
Simple. Here, the income tax, the more you earn, the more you pay. That's progressive, right?
Right.
Sales tax, the more you spend, the more you pay. That's progressive, right? That's progressive.
How about a third one? How about a wealth tax? In other words...
What's a wealth tax?
A wealth tax is a tax on money you haven't earned.
And what is that?
What is that? We don't start as equals in this country, right? You have people that are born into poverty and people are born into wealth. It's a tax on Paris Hilton. It's a tax on money you have earned.
You get Paris Hilton when she dies. There's your estate tax.
Which I support, but it's being cut back.
Go get the money from her now if you think you can do it. Now, Mark,
but
here.
My point is that we don't all start at the same level.
Well, of course we don't. We can't make everybody start at the same level. Either you may not be as intelligent as the next person, or you're maybe more intelligent. So what do we do about that?
Well, we can't do anything about that.
Oh, that's right. So maybe we ought to consider that when we're trying to create a society to govern ourselves.
How is a sales tax any less corruptible than an income tax?
Because it's total transparent. It's all transparent. If you have a sales tax at 20%, that's it. Everybody knows what you're paying. How do you change that? There's no exceptions. Now, we take care of the poor. We take care of the average American on the essentials of life by determining what would it cost you per month to pay a tax on the essentials of life. And then we write a check for that. You get it back.
A negative income tax. A negative sales tax in that case.
No, it's not a negative sales tax. It's not a negative sales tax. Please, don't read things. There's a book out called the Fair Tax Book. Read it. And I would say it's the Fair Green Tax. Because once we do this, we change this nation from a consuming nation to a savings nation. And that'll do more to protect the environment than anything else we could think of doing.
Well, we give up on the progressive taxation?
Pardon me?
We give up on progressive rates?
What have progressive rates done for you? I mean, we're screwing the American people with your progressive rate.
Well, it depends where, right?
Well, wait a second.
I'm under Bill Clinton, it was fairer than it is today.
Yeah.
I know, we have to wrap it up.
Mark, no. Just stop and think. What you're articulating. Go back and read the tax code. It's 4 feet high.
Yes, it is.
If you can find a human being that understands it all, I'll give you a buck.
I agree the tax code needs reform. The devil is in the details.
That's right. And so you do away with all the details and you say you got a simple sales tax. There's no details. You got a simple sales tax that I know what
you can have a simple income tax.
Pardon me?
You can have a simple income tax, too.
Oh, tell me about that.
You could.
Never heard of that.
It's the same thing. Simplicity.
Mark, please. I've got 8 years on the finance committee. With all due respect. With all due respect.
I think whatever you do, sales tax or income tax, members of Congress are going to muck with it and throw in all kinds of loopholes.
First off, they're never going to pass it. The reason why they don't want a sales tax, it dilutes their power. They can't change anything after that. Okay. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, Mark.
Well, you heard it, and if you got lost in the details, I think there's a reason why. I'm going to take a quick break, and then when I come back, I know that we've got some calls about Mike Gravel, and I want to hear what you have to say, and then I'll say what I have to say about the interview you just heard. We'll be right back right after this.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I hope you enjoyed my interview with probably the most obscure candidate running for President of the United States, former Senator Mike Gravel of Alaska. Of course, he was Senator many years ago, some 20 years ago. He did run as a Democrat. Of course, Alaska at that time was the smallest state in the United States. So he's probably elected by only a few tens of thousands of people. And if you thought his ideas were a little strange for a Democrat, well, join the club. I did, too. I want to comment on the interview. But first, Susan has called back. I know she wants to comment on Gravel as well. Susan, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, this, well, I call it an initiative process because I live in a state that has an initiative process. And that's what it is, basically.
Where do you live, Susan?
I live in Oregon. Which
in
is-
Oregon, okay.
Yeah,
well, I used to live in California, so I'm also well familiar with the process.
Yeah. I live in the one and only state that has an assisted suicide law.
Yes, it does.
So, and most of these states are rabidly against that idea.
That's right. And I have no problem with that. I believe it was Jefferson that called the states laboratories of democracy.
Exactly.
I think it's fine for Oregon voters to vote for that and not have another. But here's the thing that
is,
Gravel and I, we tangled on, and it's very important to me, and he kind of rushed to say, let's agree to disagree. I mean, I don't think he's thought through. He wants to allow people, as it happens in California all the time, to pay for petition gatherers. So what happens in California is that, for example, there was, I forget what it was, there was some initiative that would have basically given a huge amount of California taxpayer money to huge corporations, AT&T and all the like. And so AT&T spent hundreds of millions of dollars to get petition gatherers to go out there and trick people into signing the petition, and they could get that on the ballot. Whereas poor people who have an initiative just need to work on, basically shoe leather. In my view, you shouldn't be able to pay petition gatherers. If you care enough to get the issue on the ballot, you should be able to take your free time and stand out in front of the supermarket and get signatures. Otherwise, somebody's paying, and then it's about money. It's not about about
citizens. Oregon just went through a battle for that, and we finally got, we're finally getting to the point where the paid people are being eased out, but they're still not gone. But we're working on it. But,
well, good. That to me would be a terrific initiative because, if people really care about an issue, I'm all for direct democracy. I'm not knocking direct democracy per se. I don't think it would work at the federal level. I just think we live in too complex a country. This is an ancient Greece or Switzerland.
Well, an example is, say the rest of the country doesn't like Oregon's assisted suicide law. Are they going to be allowed to come in and say you can't have it?
The issue I raised with him. I raised the issue of states' rights, and he says, oh, well, we'll have it at all levels. Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'd be concerned. I raised that exact question with him, and he ducked it.
Yeah, and that makes me really, really nervous. We went through one civil war. We really don't need another one.
The other thing that really surprised me, I mean, okay, direct democracy, it's sort of an interesting political science question. It's not something that's going to happen anytime soon.
No.
Will never happen at all. You need a constitutional amendment. This is the issue upon which he's making his campaign. Obviously, he's not a serious candidate for President of the United States. But then the other issue he runs on, he sounds like a right-wing nut job. I mean, he wants to get rid of the income tax and pass the sales tax. Now, what the sales tax does is it means if you buy food, you have to pay a tax, a quite heavy tax. If you buy health care, you have to pay a heavy tax, and it would be taxed the same as those that buy luxury yachts. And I raised the issue of a wealth tax, and he sort of shucked and avoided it. But why? I don't understand how anyone who claims to be a Democrat, who claims to care for the poor, wants to get rid of the progressive tax system. It's really a very simple idea. The idea is if you make $10 million a year, all right, you can afford to give up more of your income, say, 40%,
exactly,
than if you make $10,000 a year, because
exactly,
40% of $10,000, you're left with virtually nothing. You know, that's why we have a progressive system. And it's one of the tricky things right-wingers do all the time. They say, well, our tax system's too complicated, we have to simplify it. A progressive system is very simple, okay? You just have several tiers. You know, that's not the complexity. The complexity is all the, oil and tax subsidies and things like that we could still get rid of.
Yeah. Anytime somebody starts yelling flat tax or anything like that, I start saying libertarian right-winger.
Well, that's exactly what he is. He is a libertarian right-winger. And I'm not really sure why he's even been included. It's interesting. There's another candidate running in the Republican Party.
Go ahead. He does have one function, as a gadfly.
Well, right. He serves as a gadfly. But, I don't really understand. I guess the Democrats include everyone. I mean, does that mean if I run for president tomorrow, they'll include me too?
I don't know.
It's interesting. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Susan.
I honestly don't know. I do know some of the things, like the war, I agree with, but other things, I will quote Senator Gravel, "You scare me."
Yeah, he's kind of a scary person. It's interesting. There is a Republican candidate for president who was the chairman of the Cook County Republicans, John Cox, who I interviewed in January of this year. He's not allowed to sit in the Republican debates. He's not allowed to be a part of them. So it's an interesting question to find out, who they allow on stage and who they don't. Listen, I mean, when a presidential candidate was willing to interview with me, I figured I should interview him. In fact, he'd been on my show before. But I think after that interview, I would be happy with any of the Democratic candidates running except him. some I prefer more than others. I'll grant you that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be willing to say that every single other candidate I would rather see as president than Mike Gravel.
Yeah. I agree.
Susan, thanks for calling in. I appreciate that.
Thanks a lot. I'm sorry to bug you twice.
No. Hey, twice in one day. That's something really special. I had two interesting things you're interested in. I want to get to some of my other interviews, though, in the short time we have left. One I want to get to is that of Susie Turnbull. As I said, she's the second in charge of the Democratic Party, and she gives some insight into our really strange primary system.
Susie, one of the questions that people have is, why the heck are we having a presidential primary 1 year before the election? I mean, it used to be that you decided them by June, and then you decided them by May, and then last 4 years is by March. Now it looks like some of the decisions may be made in calendar year 2007. What can the Democratic Party do to, if you will, stop the madness, this leapfrogging of state one over another? It just seems to me that the right way to do it is maybe some random process where every state could have a chance. Why should Iowa and New Hampshire always get to go first?
Actually, we had a process. In 2004, actually, we started a commission of the Democratic Party to look at the primary process. The commission worked for over a year. And in the beginning of 2006, we passed rules and regulations having to do with our primary process.
Well, what kind of rules and regulations?
The rules were, we have a window. We were going to have four contests in January, Iowa, Nevada, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, to end by January 29th. And those four would be from four different regions of the country. States submitted plans, ideas. They competed to be one of those.
Well, that actually makes sense.
States.
You have Northeast, West, Midwest, and the South. They're all fairly small states, so it's
and
easy
we also,
to campaign in.
And also we have states that bring more diversity to the issue with Nevada, and which has a very large Hispanic population and an African-American population, and South Carolina, which is a very large African-American population. Nevada also is a state that has a huge labor force.
It's also a huge purple state. I always think Nevada is the next state to become ours.
Well, Nevada has this huge growth. And so what we did is we set up a process, set those four forward, and then we said, if you break that window, you will be penalized. You will lose half of your delegates, and the entire Democratic Party, the commission voted on these rules and regulations, and then the entire Democratic Party voted on this recommendations after our Rules Committee took a look at it, too. So everybody bought into this system.
Except the states.
Most of the states did. And then because the window ends February, so in February they could move forward. So then the next thing that happened is several of the states chose to move forward. Some of their legislatures moved forward. And, in fact, our own region here in the Washington area, Maryland, D.C., Washington, D.C., and Virginia all are doing a regional primary, basically, on February 12th. What people need to remember is that primaries and caucuses are proportional. There is no such thing as winner-take-all. So while we have huge states having their actions on February 5th, and those four states before then, a number of delegates are going to be up for grabs still. And so by the time they come to this region on February 12th, it may be a case where we will be making the decision here.
Tell me what's going on with Florida.
Florida, the Republican legislature in Florida and the Republican governor signed a bill pushing, they're the majority in Florida, pushing the primary up to January 29th, which breaks the window.
Okay, but how they can control their own Republican primary. That's fine. How can the Republican legislature of Florida choose the Democratic primary of Florida?
Well, the legislatures set the primary date.
They do.
Yes.
For both
absolutely,
parties.
For both parties. And in order for the Florida Democratic Party to have a more binding for convention delegates, they would have had to pay for their own caucus system possibly any time later, in March or later in February. And the costs of doing that would also mean far fewer voters participating in the process.
Do you think the Republican legislature of Florida did that just because it was
absolutely
against the Democratic Party rules?
Absolutely. And in fact, it was against the Republican Party rules as well. I don't know what their sanctions are, but in our case, we have very tough sanctions.
Okay. So this is a decent stopgap measure for 2008, but come 2012, shouldn't we push all of this back? I mean, why shouldn't we have primaries that are a couple weeks apart and all the way from January to June? And again,
well,
my first question, why should Iowa and New Hampshire always get to be first? I mean, you know, I don't want to live in Des Moines or Manchester. Mm-hmm. Why can't Virginia have a chance to be first?
Well, I think that, in fact, what it is, and I've campaigned in New Hampshire. I haven't really campaigned in Iowa, but I can tell you it's an amazing process that people really have a sense of who the candidate is, and they really get to know the candidates, know everyone. There's a joke there. It's I'll only vote for someone if I've met him at least a half a dozen times.
So is the argument that small states should go first?
Well, the argument is
because, you know, there's Delaware, Rhode Island. I got other small states
right
for you.
I think that in this case that in New Hampshire it's become part of their economy to some degree, and to lose that first in the nation primary hurts their economy, and I don't think there's a reason to do that. That's part of it. But I think it's also the case that they got it down. They know how to do this. But more importantly,
can we shuffle the other states around at least?
As far as the whole issue of the schedule altogether, one of the things that is really clear is that this is starting so much faster and people are pushing forward. And many people believe, and I am one of those people who believes this, is that people just can't wait for 2008 to come. And so they've pushed it forward. When Bill Clinton ran for president, he didn't announce for president until October of 1991. We have a whole campaign that's 18 months ahead of that.
Do you think there's still room for someone else to get in the race in August to September? A lot of my listeners I haven't hidden my enthusiasm for Al Gore. He won the election in 2000, and frankly, although I like all the candidates running, I think he would be better than any of them. That's my personal. I know you can't choose among them. They're like all your children. You can't
That's
say.
That's exactly the word that I use. They're all my children.
But if for those of us that really like Al Gore, and I've always been a big fan of his, could he get in this race in August, September, and still make a run for it?
Well, I think that Al Gore is one of the people that would be able to do that, and the reason is because his name recognition is about 100%, that the work that he's been doing has been so significant, that the networks that he has, his ability to raise money, his ability to organize.
So he could do it, but virtually no one else could.
I think other people would have a great deal of difficulty doing that.
Well, just my plug, if you're talking to Al anytime soon, there's a whole bunch of us that would really like to see him as President of the United States.
I think he knows.
Okay, well, good. Thank you again for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
Thanks, Mark.
Well, you heard it. That was Susie Turnbull. I don't know that she really answered my question about why New Hampshire and Iowa always get to go first. She had to be politic and protect them. But their economy, not the best answer in the world. If we have time, I'd like to play for you one last interview I had with Kathleen Kennedy Townsend, a Kennedy child and someone who ran for governor of Maryland. What's interesting is I'm not going to play the whole interview right now because we don't have enough time. Just the last segment where I tell her, why should anyone be in politics? It's such a dirty game. And I want, this is her answer.
As Kathleen Kennedy Townsend was about to leave, I was telling her how I wanted to see Al Gore run for president of the United States. And she said, well, he's good on policy, but he doesn't like politics very much. And I said, you know, I think that's a good thing. I like to think I'm good on policy, but I don't like politics very much. It's a dirty business. And she says, you have to like politics.
Politics is the way we make decisions. Politics is if you don't like politics, then you shouldn't be in politics. But politics makes an understanding.
Can't you be in government and not like politics?
People are. But I do believe that we have to... I think politics is the way that democracy works. Politics says to me, I've got to understand where Mark comes from. I may disagree with his policy, but I have to understand him. He's a worthy human being. His desires, his needs, his dreams are something important. That's politics.
Okay, but I have no problem with debates. I love the debates. That's
this
good.
Isn't about,
but I'm talking about, you know, you, come on.
I'm not talking about debates.
I'm talking about dirty tricks. I'm talking about the Swift boat liars. I'm talking about the tricks
well,
Karl Rove plays
that.
About
say,
John McCain having a black
okay.
baby. That's politics today, and it's dirty and it's ugly.
Well, that's not all that politics is today. And I think it's important to distinction between the dirty tricks part and what politics, because politics is really, if you think of it, would go back to the ancient Greeks, rule of the people. And it really
oh,
is...
Oh, I support democracy. I just don't
no,
like politics.
But politics gives you the way that you work with all sorts of different people. You learn about them. It's not... You know, if
but
you
can't
just
we
talk,
clean it up? I mean
you
get
just
all
talk,
that money out of politics. Can't
well,
we do that at
that,
least?
You know, money is part of politics.
Why can't we have public financing of campaigns?
Well, you might, but people are going to always figure out how they want to... influence politics by money. They're going to take out ads. They're going to always do something like that. So the question is, learn how to work with it. Figure out how. Look.
Well, how you know, would? Let me ask you.
So
this.
I, you know, this.
How
whole,
would you have responded to the Swift boat liars? I mean, I don't know that John Kerry responded well, but I don't know that he had a choice. I mean, they're
well,
lying about
I think
his
he knows,
service.
I think what happens now is he thought that by not responding, they would go away. And I think what he has understood, and he says it often, I should have just come back immediately. He just couldn't believe
that anyone would take him seriously.
Anybody would take, and you have to learn to take people seriously.
Even when they're lying about you.
Even when they're lying. But people do lie. And it's not just in politics. They lie in business. They lie in academics. You know, and so to pretend that this is a pure and clean world. Look, I'm Catholic. I believe in original sin. I don't come from a place that thinks that, oh, everything is going to be fine and dandy and do it on political grounds, you know, on the best policy ground that I've decided in my own head what's the best. No, politics is the understanding that you have to work together.
See, I have no... working together, coalitions, that's,
no,
that's
no, working
all well
together,
and good. But when I think of politics, that's not what I think about.
Well, that's
I think what, about
I know, and you know
polls,
why?
And I think about ads that mislead.
And you know why you do that? Because the Republicans don't want good people to go into
politics. I know that.
And so they...
So how do you fight that?
You say politics is honorable. That's what I learned growing up. Politics is important. Politics is worthwhile doing the tough stuff sometimes, and it is difficult. But if you just sort of say, well, politics is dirty and I'm not going to get involved, then you leave it to the people who are. And that is not using all the smarts, the talent that you have. You know, we have in our church this idea that from those who have been given much, much will be expected. And you have been given a lot.
And
that's what you do. So please, please, don't knock politics.
Well,
I haven't given up on politics, but I knock it because I don't like the way it's going.
And, yeah, but you can't. But you know, if you do that, then you're just falling right into Karl Rove's arms.
So what is, in your view, is the best way to get rid of dirty politics, or at least to dampen down dirty tricks?
Say politics is an honorable profession. Raise expectations. People always go to their expectations.
No, but people start, you have the 30-second ads, and people
just
believe
you say
them.
It on radio, over and over again. Change the dialogue. To
well,
be different.
I value your ideals, I do.
Be different.
A lot of people are being turned off, and
I know,
really,
and you're
really like
and you're helping them by agreeing with them. You are falling into Karl Rove's hands with every thing you say.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. I do call Karl Rove on his dirty tricks all the time.
Yeah, but the fact is, his biggest trick is to say that politics is dirty.
Because then he makes everyone who go into it tarred with it,
yes,
not just the bad guys.
Yeah,
well,
and
that's
so
true.
And therefore you don't go in and you just and it's easy to criticize and it's oh it's so cool and so sophisticated politics isn't for me. So that when I was growing up, the best and the brightest did want to go into politics. Or when Franklin Roosevelt was president, people were coming and saying, I want to be involved, I want to participate. So what happens? We have a people's government. But when you keep saying to the people, don't do it, then they don't get in. And then the few win.
Well, I agree with you. I do think we need to get more good people in there, not just people who know
and not
someone.
Just in politics, but also working in government.
Absolutely. It is an honorable service. It's an honorable profession. Thank you very much, Kathleen Kennedy.
You're a gracious debater.
Well, she did it. It's not often someone convinces me in one of these debates, but she really did convince me. If we say that all politics is dirty, I won't get involved, then those that practice dirty politics win. Then Karl Rove wins. I think she's absolutely right, and she was indeed a joy to interview. Sorry went a little over today. I wanted you to hear all of that Kathleen Kennedy Townsend interview. I have more from her, by the way, that I'm going to play at a future date. But for now, I'm way over time. This is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. Former White House counsel Harriet Myers will not show up to testify tomorrow before a House panel investigating U.S. attorney firings. President Bush ordered Myers not to appear. The president's former political director, Sarah M. Taylor, refused today to answer many questions from the panel about the firings of 9 federal prosecutors. Taylor also said she knew of no involvement by the president in those firings. Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff said he has a gut feeling about a terrorist attack in the U.S. this summer. Chertoff